Over your left shoulders and give yourselves one pat on the back.
And please send in your pledge.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
And good morning to all of you. This is Marjorie Moore. It is exactly 6 a.m. on Thursday, May 24th, 2001. Can you believe it? Well, do we have a great pledge day coming up for you. We're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, something I've been wanting to know about for a long time, and that's secret societies and their relationship to the Trilateral Commission, the Freemasons, and the Great Pyramids. And I want you to stay tuned. We have a fabulous premium for you today. So get up, no time to sleep. And it's 6:01, and I'll be back. We'll talk a minute, give you some weather, and then we're going to go right to the tapes, as they say.
If I had to choose just one day,
if I had to choose just one day to last my whole life through, it would surely be that Sunday, the day that I met you. Newborn whippoorwills were calling from the hills. Summer was a coming in, but fast. Lots of daffodils were showing off their skills, nodding all together. I could almost hear them whisper, go on, kiss her, go on and kiss her. If I had to choose one moment to live within my heart, it would be that tender moment, recalling how
Marjorie at 6:04 a.m. I want you to get up because I want you to hear what's coming up at about 6:20, 6:30. But I don't want you to miss a word of this premium. So roll over one more time, and we're going to let Nat continue to, I don't know, I love to wake up to him. Here we go.
Thank you. things to me ever before. Has someone been there?
Unforgettable in every way.
And forevermore.
And forevermore.
That's how you
yet. I'm teasing you and tickling you. Get up out of that bed. At least, no, lay there. Actually, it's a nice morning to lie there because you're going to hear something incredible in just a few minutes that's going to be our premium. I'm so thrilled to make it available to you. It's been a learning experience myself, talking to the author of Rule by Secrecy and being able to land him for 2.5-hour interview, which we're going to share with you. He is an educator and a journalist more than anything else, and the presentation of his information was just so enlightening. I am just delighted to bring it, as I said before. But in order to do that, I need to know that you all are awake. So let me know you're awake. Why don't you call our number here in the studio for a while? 212-209-2900, is it? Do I have it right, Eddie?
Yes.
2900. We're going to give another number out later, but let me just know you're awake, and when I see phones lighting up, I'll know folks are getting up. All right? So I want you to be alert while you're listening. And, you know, as always, you keep a little pad and pencil by the bed. 212-209-2900. And this is WBAI at 6:09 in the morning, and we're just going to do one more thing to help you get up.
I'm
Good morning. Are you up yet? It's 6:13. I'm still Marjorie Moore. This is Sunrise here, WBAI 99.5 FM. I know that we have a lot of new listeners, but I want to tell you folks who are sort of scooting by the dial, go back up and stay tuned at 99.5 FM. We've got a great programming day coming up for you, and we want you to, as many people as possible, to be in on the information that we're going to present today as a premium for our wonderful radio station that we are working so hard to keep alive and functioning in an outreach-loving way to the listener. You are our radio station, and we are here for you. I also just want to say thank you to all of you who take the time to write such thoughtful, long letters. I am so appreciative of those letters. And believe me, on a day when I'm just kind of a little down and I take listeners' mail and I read it, I'm very appreciative. I want to tell the men who write from prison, because I get a fair amount of prison mail, that it'll take me a little time, but I plan to answer those letters. And maybe I too will have to get some help. But I will respond to those letters soon. So hang on. I'm so glad that you are able to get this station where you are. And I'm sure it's very encouraging to you to be able to tune in. So again, when you write, those letters do not go unread. They are carefully read and thought about. So thank you very much. And I asked some of you to call and let me know you're awake, and you did. Ah, so lots of you are waking up, and 6:30 is the big moment that we're going to begin our pledge day. But until then, let's get a little weather from Joanne and help those who have to leave get out the door.
Good morning, Marjorie Moore. Today is May the 24th. It is currently 53 degrees here in Manhattan. Today, cloudy with scattered showers, high in the mid-60s. There'll be fog this morning, so be careful if you're driving in on the roadways. Tonight, cloudy with a 30% chance of showers. And sunset is at 8:14 p.m. tonight.
I'm having my coffee and gulping. All right. Shouldn't do it on mic. Sorry, folks. Go ahead, Joanne. You've got your...
Yeah, we got a little history this morning. On this day, May 24th in 1844, Samuel F.B. Morris transmitted the message, "What hath God wrought?" from Washington to Baltimore as he formally opened America's first telegraph line. And on this day in history, in 1883, the Brooklyn Bridge here in New York City, linking Brooklyn and Manhattan, was open to traffic. And for all you women college basketball fans out there, which I am, a year ago, Tennessee Vols women's coach Pat Summitt was elected to the Basketball Hall of Fame.
All right, now. Thank you, Joanne.
You're more than welcome.
Are you going to hang out while we... start our pledge day for a while?
I think I might. I enjoy it.
All right. We're going to
be having a good time. very fun.
Okay. We're going to need you to help with the phones.
Yeah.
I'm going to help with the phones. And my dear friend and sister friend, Malika Burgos, is here to help with the phones this morning. So we have a couple of other people. I had to round up the crew, the women. So... you're going to get to talk to both of them later on, and there'll be others in the pledge room later on. But in the meantime, did you know that today was Patti LaBelle's birthday? Ta-da! Happy birthday, Patti. She's given us many hours of joy, and we're going to celebrate her birthday right now. Are you up yet? I'm teasing you this morning. All right, now, so we said happy birthday to Patti LaBelle today, and somehow I think we didn't say it enough. So one more at 6:23 here. I'm Marjorie Moore at WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM. And where are we? Two places, in the middle of the dial, FM dial, and in New York City. And we're on Wall Street, of all places, 10th floor. If any of you get up, wash your face, come on down and volunteer and help us answer the phones. We're at 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, and we do need your assistance this morning. So come on down. But before we do that, let's do the classic Patti LaBelle.
All
right, now I suspect that all of you are up a significant number of you called to let me see the phone light up, and so I know you are awake. And now I think we have the attention of all of you at 6:28 here on WBAI during our pledge drive, which is doing very well thanks to you listeners. And boy, oh boy, are we ever listener supported. We are corporate free radio, free speech radio. How do I know that? Because of the material that we are able to bring to you that we couldn't bring anywhere else. In fact, what we are going to do today is bring you a book that I found out yesterday is about number 18 on the New York Times bestseller list, and even the New York Times will not review the book. It's called Rule by Secrecy, and it is written by Jim Mars. Jim is also the author of a bestseller called Crossfire, which was about the JFK assassination. And Jim's book covered the assassination part of it more than anything else for the Oliver Stone movie on JFK. And he takes you on a journey into a lot of the ways that we are controlled by the government, by small groups of people, by power, by money, profit. But he does it in a way where he is truly educating us and explaining things. You'll hear me in the interview at one point, finally getting it about what money is. You know, it sounds silly after all these years. But when you hear that little section, I don't think I'm the only one that has a lot of questions about how things are set up and run. I am not a sophisticated politician. I'm not a sophisticated historian. I am a seeker for truth, and I do it pretty open-heartedly, and I want to hear all sides of all stories. That's that's the nature of my character. I just want to hear from everybody. I think that makes me a free speech person. And he is one person I've wanted to hear from. I had him on Sunrise a couple of weeks ago. We did two shows. It still wasn't enough to really get into the book the way Jim has heavily resourced the book. So if we're having issues with some of the things that he says, the book itself is heavily researched, but it's in a way that you can deal with it. For example, if you turn to something he says on page 19 and then you go to the back of the book, he's got page 19 and the sources, which makes it real easy for someone like me to follow up, which I did on a couple of things that I was concerned about, and I hope that you will too. All right, today at the number's going to be 212-209-2950. I want you to jot it down now, 212-209-2950, because if you're going to get this package, you're going to need to do it before you go to work. So we want you to jot that number down. I'll tell you about the package when we come back, and I anticipate great involvement this morning because of the nature of the information that you're going to want to hear it again and again and again. So we're going to make 2 one-hour tapes available and Jim's book, Rule by Secrecy, for the meager price of $150. You're going to be getting something worth way over that. So hang on. We're going to go to the tape. And it's an interview I did with Jim Mars, a brand new one. And please pay close attention.
Okay, Marjorie, so good to be talking with you today.
Yeah, good afternoon. It's rainy here in New York.
Oh, it's hot here in Texas.
Oh, we can share. All right, folks, I just want to reintroduce you. Jim Mars, and it's spelled with two R's, is the author of Rule by Secrecy. He is also the author of Alien Agenda. And another book called Crossfire, which is one of the books that was used in the production of Oliver Stone's JFK. He used Garrison's view, and Crossfire, Jim's view, handled all the assassination details. Is that right, Jim?
Yeah, that's essentially
basically
correct.
Basically it. And today we're going to pursue your book a little bit more. We did it on, we had Jim on two one-hour sessions of Sunrise early in the morning. We laid this on the folks.
But it was so good and in such demand, we thought that we would have you back for our special pledge drive with a longer interview where we could really get into the issues a little bit better about secret societies and how they impact our government and thus our lives. So first I wanted to ask you, Jim, why did you write this book called Rule by Secrecy?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was on a talk show not too long back, and the host referred to my trilogy of books, and it kind of took me aback because I thought, wait a minute, I've written three books. I hadn't written a trilogy.
Uh-huh.
And then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know, actually, that's kind of true. Following the success of Crossfire, which was a basis for the Oliver Stone movie, I would ask people, what do you think is the next big, deep, dark, secret government cover-up? And almost unanimously, from New York cab drivers to publishers to West Coast executives, they say, I want to know, what's the deal on the, what's the real true thing on the UFOs? You know, is there anything there? What's really going on? And so I thought, you know, I'd like to know that too, and I'd been keeping up with that issue since a young guy in the 50s. So I produced Alien Agenda. Well, at the last chapter of Alien Agenda is entitled, Take Me to Your Leader, which, of course, is the old stereotype of the little green guy gets out and he says, take me to your leader. Well, that raised the question, who is our leader?
Mm-hmm.
Who speaks for Earth?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and actually, I don't guess there's anybody that speaks for Earth. George W. doesn't speak for Earth. Probably about half the country doesn't even think he speaks for the United States. Putin doesn't speak for the Earth. So that raises the question of who's really in charge. And when I begin to look at that, I begin to see that this is a very serious question that we need to address. For example, back in the early 90s, 1992, then newly elected President Bill Clinton appointed his old golfing buddy, Webster Hubble, as Associate Attorney General of the United States. And in a recent book, Hubble wrote that one of the things he felt bad about was he thought he had let his old friend Bill down, because he says in his book that when Bill sent him to the Justice Department, he said, Webb, I want you to find out the answer to two things for me. He said, I want you to find out who killed JFK and what's the deal on the UFOs. And Hubble said he did not feel like that he was able to get to the information and was not satisfied with the information he did receive. Now, that's pretty serious. That means that the President of the United States, the leader of the free world, cannot get to the information on topics that are of great importance to a lot of people. Who's in charge here? Who's really running the show? And that led me to the study of what I call the secret societies.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this may be the appropriate time to point out that, or to make a definition of what I mean by a secret society. Now, the ones that I deal with, starting with the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, and the inner core elite of these two, which meet yearly under the name Bilderbergers, they're not truly secret societies in that nobody knows they exist. Heck, they have offices in New York, you know. They've even got websites.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like nobody knows they're there. They're there.
We can start with, let's start with something contemporary. You say in the book, just to get people connected here, you say that George W. and Al Gore both have strong ties to secret society.
That's true, although neither one, to the best of my knowledge, are card-carrying members of one of these secret societies. They nevertheless are surrounded by these people. George W., of course, through his father, who was a member of the Trilateral Commission and of the Council on Foreign Relations and attended Bilderberg meetings. And then Al Gore, through both Bill and Hillary Clinton, who attended Bilderberg meetings, and through George Soros, one of his advisors, who's a big luminary in the Council on Foreign Relations, and other powerful people in government. For example, George W.'s cabinet and the people surrounding him today are chock full of these secret society people, such as Dick Cheney, who is a member of both the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations, Robert Blackwell, Stephen Hadley, Richard Pearl, George Shultz, Paul Wolfowitz, Robert Zelick, Condoleezza Rice. I mean, all these are members of these societies, and it's kind of interesting to me. I mean, again, I'm not necessarily just totally opposed to some secret society. I mean, the Little Rascals had the Woman's Haters Club or whatever, and I was in a college fraternity, and we had our secret handshakes and stuff like that. And most of that's pretty innocuous. But when you find these same people down through a period of years who belong to these same groups and who seem to have a revolving door with the federal government of the United States, where they keep moving in and out of these powerful and prominent positions, I think it behooves us to ask ourselves what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And this is what I've done in my book, Rule by Secrecy, is to go back and to study the origins and the creation of these societies, who the people are that are actually behind them. For example, in the case of the Trilateral Commission, this was founded in 1973 by David Rockefeller and seven other members of the Council on Foreign Relations. So I think it's fair to say that the Trilateral Commission is nothing more than just a little more public manifestation of the Council on Foreign Relations.
And what is their goal? What is it they? It's not democracy.
No, it's they're that again. This is no big secret. All you have to do is read Foreign Affairs, which is the official publication of the Council on Foreign Relations. Read the Trilateralist publications, and it's very plain. They want they are after globalism, as they call it, or as we often hear it referred to as the New World Order. And this is one world government, one world economy, one world army to enforce the one world government's edicts. And there are even those who are talking about a one world religion. And if you think that I'm just making all this stuff up, David Rockefeller in June of 1991 made this comment before the Trilateral Commission. He says, "We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity during those years. But the work is now much more sophisticated and prepared to march towards a world government, the supranatural sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national autodetermination practiced in past centuries." Mm. Now, and if you think that, well, he's just a banker and he doesn't have any connection to anything, I would simply point to you to the quote of Strobe Talbert, who for the past 8 years has been Deputy Secretary of State of the United States. And he told Time Magazine in an interview on July the 20th, 1992, "In the next century, nations as we know it will be obsolete. All states will recognize a single global authority." And then Strobe Talbert had to add, "National sovereignty wasn't such a great idea after all." Now, that bothers me, because this is a ranking member of the federal government of the United States who has taken an oath to defend and preserve the Constitution of the United States, but he's saying that the United States, with our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and our sovereignty as a nation, is really not such a good idea. Mm. And yet, see, this is not told to people. And why? Because, like David Rockefeller said, the major mass media is part and parcel of this whole process. Their owners and their top editors are members of these organizations, and they are held to secrecy. They're not supposed to talk about all this whole plan.
You know,
and it's really incredible, but that's where we are.
Just one more current thing. What did you make of that speeding train with McVeigh headed toward death? You know, just all of a sudden it stops, the whole situation is turned around.
Well,
what is that all about?
Marjorie, that could take an entire program in and of itself, but let me see if I can give you the bottom line of what's going on here. McVeigh, if you go back and study his childhood, comes from a very straight conservative American family. He goes in the military. He was a super soldier. He goes in the Marines or whatever. And then he was sheep dipped. Okay? Now, this is a term meaning that he was got out of the military on paper and publicly, but actually he continued to work as an undercover operative. And they sent him to infiltrate the militia movements and the patriot movements and to be an agent provocateur. That's why the Michigan militia threw him out. They said he was too radical.
Uh-huh.
All right? And he was trying to cause trouble because he was actually working for the U.S. government. But now while he was in there and as he became exposed to all of this, the patriot movement and the and to the information that they have about the wrongdoing, the drug smuggling, the corruption within the federal government, I think he probably really did come to despise the government and feel like that, that this was the enemy. And I think it's because, although he didn't realize he was looking at the New World Order, I think he realized it for what it was, a totalitarian plan, and he began to fight against it, and his handlers realized this and used him as the patsy in the Oklahoma City bombing. Because number one, there were two explosions. Number two, I know of no explosive expert anywhere who truly believes that McVeigh, with 3,000 pounds of ammonia nitrate fertilizer, blew down that federal building. It just didn't happen. The reason I know it didn't happen is because in the early 90s, the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, drove a truck into the central business district of London and set off an ammonia nitrate bomb, okay? Mm-hmm. And it blew out some windows and it damaged some cars, but it didn't blow down one building, and that was 65,000 pounds of ammonia nitrate.
Okay.
So you can't tell me that 3,000 pounds blew down that building. There was something else going on, and McVeigh is the new modern Lee Harvey Oswald, although he is involved, okay?
Uh-huh.
Don't get
uh-huh.
me wrong. He's
uh-huh.
not some innocent off the street. He was involved, and he may even truly believe he blew up that building because he probably set off that little ammonia nitrate in that
so
truck.
So why would they then save his life?
Well, because what has happened is, number one, they immediately destroyed the evidence. They bulldozed the building. They destroyed the building. They covered it all over, put it behind barbed wire with armed guards so nobody could get to it. And that was before the McVeigh's defense or any disinterested objective party could get to it to study the evidence. There was the basic evidence, and it was destroyed. Now, the only the next basic evidence is McVeigh himself, and he was all set to be executed, and then it'd be over with. And from that point on, it would just be conspiracy theory.
Uh-huh.
Okay? But here's what's interesting. Within the government is no more monolithic than any other organization. There are good, honest, honorable people within the federal government of the United States, and it's a constant push and pull to try to see if they can cover up the truth or if they can release the truth. And I think it's interesting that once Bill Clinton is out of office, and we have a new administration in, and Louis Freeh, who was a FBI chief under Clinton, he leaves, and just within days, it's, oh, look, we found 3,100 pages of McVeigh evidence.
Right, right.
You know, it was never lost. It was there all the time. It was they were covering it up, just like the FBI helped cover up the Kennedy assassination, just like the FBI has covered up many other serious issues, including Waco and Ruby Ridge, okay?
Uh-huh.
And but yet there are people within the FBI who now think, well, now maybe we can try to get this out. And so now they're putting out some of this information. Now, I don't think that these new documents are going to, you're not going to find a smoking gun there. But I think what you're going to find, and the evidence that's plainly out there in plain sight, if the government and if the corporate control media would ever tell the people about it, is that there were two explosions, there was something else going on in Oklahoma City, and that there were many other people involved, including people who can be tracked back to our own CIA and national security systems, such as John Doe number 2, 3, 4. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Which they all, in the days after the bombing, we heard about all that. And then it's all of a sudden, it's like, oh, well, that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like in the an hour after the blast. They came on the, I was watching it. They came on the television. They said they've reported they found more bombs in the building. And they've cordoned off the building. They stopped the rescue operation. They moved the crowds and the news media back 12 blocks or so nobody could see what was going on. But they did see that trucks went in there, military trucks, and that they loaded something into these trucks and hauled it all away. Well, what was all that? Well, there's just a whole story going on there, and we have not been told the truth about it. And I personally feel like that the sudden finding of these 3,100 file documents in McVeigh's case is simply an attempt by people on the inside to try to blow the whistle and tell the American public that there's something going on here that needs to be investigated.
All right, and just one more, Jim, current thing that I wanted you to just comment on, and then we're going to get into the connections and the meaning of things. And that is the election debacle in Florida. What was that all about, the last presidential election?
Well, let me preface by saying this. Catherine Harris, that was the Secretary of State there in Florida that did so much to stop the vote counting and assure George W. of getting the presidency, according to U.S. News and World Report, just recently she was inducted into the Council on Foreign Relations. So now she's one of them. And so, see, she got her payback. Now, that whole election thing really was an interesting case because, number one, I can assure you that these globalists, these people at the inner core of these secret societies, they didn't really care whether you voted for Oil Man Bush or Oil Man Gore. The Gore family has been on the payroll of Occidental Petroleum for years. In fact, in 96, it was largely through the efforts of Al Gore Jr. that there was the largest sale of public lands in U.S. history, and a lot of it went to Occidental Petroleum. So, you know, the oil men don't care which one you voted for. They control both of them, just as does the inner elite of these secret societies. So why was there such a hoorah over this election? And I'll tell you, my personal thought on this, I can't guarantee this is true, and like everything else I'm saying in our little talk here, Marjorie, I'm not asking for you or anybody else to believe me or trust in me, you know, but hey, this is the way it shapes up. Starting back in the early 90s, when they began to make their big push towards globalization, and trying to pull us away from the idea of national sovereignty and getting us accustomed and accepting of the idea of a world government, there were two things that stood in the way of that, okay? And there were two icons, two American traditions that most people, regardless of race, creed, color, national origin, religion, or anything else, that we all rallied around. And one of those was the dignity and the sanctity of the office of the presidency of the United States. Mm-hmm. Well, Bill Clinton took care of that, okay? I mean, now it's a laughingstock. So there was only one more left, and that was the sanctity of our individual vote. And this last election brouhaha pretty well took care of that. Mm-hmm. Anybody who saw the maps showing county by county voting in this country realizes that there's something very much wrong going on as far as our votes go, because the vast 85% of the counties in this country voted for George W. Bush, but the 15% that voted for Gore were the inner city metropolitan areas, which contained the bulk of the people, which, according to the Electoral College, then put them on an even race. Okay? And that, to me, is great irony, because the whole Electoral College system was put into the Constitution by our forefathers for the express purpose of preventing mob rule. Okay? If you stop and think about it, democracy is best typified by a lynch mob. Okay? The majority say lynch him. So they do. And we know that's not the way to do things, and that's why that we supposedly in this country have a democratic republic, which means first he has to go through the rule of law and you have to give him a fair trial and then you can lynch him. Okay? But see, they're pushing us away from this. And so to do that, they have to get us disgruntled and dissatisfied with our system. And that's what this election thing was all about, is to show, you know, because nobody really got satisfied except some of the more ardent Bush supporters, because he managed to get in. But everybody looks at that and says, holy cow, my vote doesn't count because it all comes down to a hanging Chad down in South Florida, and then based on what some lawyer can argue and what some court rules.
Mm-hmm.
It makes a mockery of our system. And I want to tell you something, that there's, like everything else, there's it's a double-edged sword on this whole thing. By going to the computer voting as they have, there is too much room within the current system for corruption and for manipulation. Who programs those computers? Who counts those things? Who knows what's in those computers? You know, it's a real problem. But on the other hand, they have new, modern, sophisticated computer equipment that could actually track any individual vote right through the system and show that it was voted the way that the voter intended it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So if they would use the right programs, overseen properly, computerization might return us to true participatory democracy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to take some work, and it's going to take a lot of looking and a lot of hassle, and that is kind of comes down to the real basics, Marjorie,
mm-hmm.
which is, are we willing to turn off our TV sets and not care about who's going to survive in front of some cameras out on an island somewhere with a cold beer behind a bush,
mm-hmm.
or and get out and really work for our democracy and really practice what we preach, or are we going to be content to sit back and sit in front of our computer screens and our TV screens and let some of these secret society members make the decisions that affect the way we live in this world?
Jim, I see in the book, too, I just want to go over with folks some of the family names that we know that you have spent quite a bit explaining to us in the book. And again, listeners, the book is Rule by Secrecy, and we're talking with Jim Mars, the author of the book. Jim, you mentioned clearly the Rockefellers, the Morgans, and the Rothschilds.
Mm-hmm.
Could you take each one of those families and point out to us what we should be aware of in regards to their connection to these powerful, powerful secret societies and power in general, their relationship to it?
Well...
Hello, hello, hello. Are you listening to this man lay it out for us and the his observations about McVeigh? Well, we're making this and so much more available to you listeners today here on WBAI to support this radio station. The very first thing you have to do is jot down this number, 212-209-2950. What is that number? 212-209-2950. Now, I want to get the 2 one-hour tapes and the book, Rule by Secrecy, into your hands as soon as possible. And I can only do that if you are willing to call right now, 212-209-2950, and become a member of this radio station and let them know, the people who are answering the phone, the precious volunteers in there, that you want the package. For $150, you get 2 one-hour tapes with Jim Mars. You get his book called Rule by Secrecy, and you get your membership in WBAI. We love your credit card. We take American Express, Master, and Visa. And all you have to do is dial that phone, 212-209-2950. I want to give you as much from the interview that I can this morning up until 10 o'clock, but you have to do your part as well. We anticipate great involvement in this station as we bring this kind of information to you. Jim Mars will not be heard on any other radio station that we can think of. Neither is his book being being reviewed in the major media. They don't want to hear this information. But you listeners do. If you're cruising by the dial, stop and listen to this station, WBAI. We are listener supported, and we need your support. Become a member of this station. You can get the book alone and your membership for $100 by calling 212-209-2950. You can get the tapes alone for $100 by calling 212-209-2950. Thank you for that call. There are two callers on the line. We need you to join these callers before you go out to work and get this package. That would be 2 one-hour tapes and the book, Rule by Secrecy. The book is heavily sourced, so you can check out what Jim is saying. The index is very specific and very full. and references and Jim's commentary is particularly insightful. He shares he shares as much as he found. I believe that as much as he knows, he put into this one book, Rule by Secrecy, the hidden history that connects the Trilateral Commission, the Freemasons, and the Great Pyramids. Coming up later on in the morning, as we move along and play snippets from the interview, you will hear his exposition about the Freemasons and their connection to our government. He will talk about the symbols and the signs located on our money and in our architecture in this country, especially in Washington, D.C. And he will speak to us in a way that we feel empowered, like we can do something about all this control. The people he's talking about in these secret societies are after the very, as he put it to me, the non-material life that we're all living. They want to deal with the non-physical even. So they want to control your heart and soul, not just of the left or the right or the middle. Everybody. They want your heart and their soul, and they're involved in everything. So this is not something to be taken lightly. I know there are a lot of junky books out there and, secret tomes about secret societies that are scary and not heavily checked and so on. But Jim is a journalist and has been for many years, and the book reflects his professionalism. If you want to become a part of this station, please, I urge you to get this kind of information into your hands. This is Jim's goal being here. Thank you. We have 4 or 5 callers on the line. The package is really only $150, and what you get for it is worth far more than that. You get this book, and the book is over 200 pages, I must tell you. The book is over 200 pages.